This is Amazing Maria, and you are listening to the OVW Podcast.
Welcome to the OVW Podcast, the unofficial podcast of Ohio Valley Wrestling. My name is Jackman Oakes. I'm joined today, as always, by Brian Hines.
Hey, Jackman.
It's a Thursday in the feed. You know what that means. We have a very special guest. Today we are joined by OVW veteran Jebediah Blackhawk. Jebediah, thank you for joining us today.
Welcome.
On this Thursday.
Well, thank you, fellas, for having me. Sorry I run a little bit late. I ran into some trouble on the road out there on the way up, you know, coming up from through Pikeville on the two-way. Seen this good-looking blonde walking down the side of the highway there, and I pulled up behind her, being the gentleman that I was, and honked my horn. I said, ma'am, I said, I noticed you carrying a car door down the side of the highway there. I'd be more than happy to put it in the back of the truck, take you anywhere you want to go. She said, sir, I do not talk to strangers. So, of course, I got out the truck, went in for a closer look because I'll make sure she wasn't dangerous. And said, ma'am, honestly, I said, it troubles me. We put that car door in the back of the truck there. I'll take you anywhere you want to go. You got your cell phone on. You call a friend. You'll be perfectly safe. She said, sir, I told you I do not talk to strangers. I said, well, ma'am, I got to know. Why are you carrying that car door down the side of the highway? She said, in case I get hot, I can roll the window down.
So you make your way all the way from Pikeville, you know, Eastern Kentucky, Far Eastern Kentucky, to Louisville in 1997, or do you start wrestling in Pikeville?
About that neck of the woods, feller. I'm from out that way, and then found my way to Louisville under Danny Davis out there. It was Nightmare Incorporated before it was OVW in 96, 97, and showed up out there. Danny Davis was nice enough to teach me the craft of professional wrestling. I ain't never looked back. So I've resided in Louisville for the most part, you know, on and off. Get home every now and then, but.
So Danny Davis is kind of, he's the reason that we're here. He's the reason that we have this thing going on at all. And you're still associated with the company that he, in essence, created and helped craft and help reach national, you know, national recognition. But you're still here. You go back to that first day, that first OVW show, that first training session with Nightmare Danny Davis. Would you ever think that you would still be in Louisville, Kentucky with the company that he helped create?
Well, feller, it was a long time ago. You know, episode, go back to OVW TV number one. That's, you look it up there, and there I am on it, wrestling. Hung around Ohio Valley here for a few years, and then I walked away from Ohio Valley Wrestling to pursue other ventures, and found my way back to OVW about 3 years ago. You know, it's kind of, it's always going to be one of those places for the fellas. You can leave, but the door is always open. You know, I just wish I hadn't waited so long to go back, because I might have missed. Doors open, but the window's closed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But getting in there now and working with some young talent, and opportunity to work with the next big names in the industry, and that just gives me a thrill. Whether I ain't got a heavyweight championship in my near future, I'm certain one of these fellers or young ladies have titles in their future.
What are some of the biggest parallels you could draw between when you were training with Nightmare Danny Davis and some of the training that you see going on at Ohio Valley Wrestling today?
It's still hands on. It's the true craft of professional wrestling. You go down there and learn from Zeke behind the barn. He's got a ring and he'll teach you how to wrestle. No, you get a full on education from day one at Ohio Valley Wrestling, from when I was there training that long ago till today. Only difference is now they got a whole lot of great cash flows, a trainer out there, and Tony Gunn's a trainer out there, Doug Basham, who was indeed, you know, Danny Davis's first student. And they're out there, you know, they've got classes that, you know, beginners and advanced and the middle there. When I trained with Danny, it was one class, and you got your advanced training on the road. He put you out there and you paired with certain guys. I got a chance to get on the road with Vic the Bruiser, if you know that feller. He took me out on the road with him the first time, and then that's where you get your real education as a professional wrestler. Then on the road, you don't feel that experience is where you learn the craft. It's you, anybody can teach you how to take, you know, to wrestle and take bumps and all those things, but it's not till you get out there on the road. Now, with OVW, worked a lot of shows for Danny. I mean, there was a time there I was working 6-7 nights a week. At least 4 or 5 of them were for Danny at OVW, mm-hmm. different places around, and he'd get as far, you know, E-Town, and he'd hit the old St. Teresa's gym out there in Germantown in Louisville. But then, you know, weekends would roll around, you'd find yourself down there in Memphis rolling around with guys like Chris yeah. Champion and a lot. And Central City, that was back way back when. That's old Adcock was running Central City Beaver Dam out there on the other side of state. And we got a green light to go out there and wrestle with them boys. And Danny's guys, we'd all get in the car together and we'd go venture out, whether it was Central City, Memphis, or Nashville. You get on that, try to put that loop together, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, it's 3 years later.
And so that would take you to the year 2000.
Give or take, yeah. And I went out on the independent circuit for a little bit, wrestled a couple different companies, retired the first time.
Okay.
And you never truly retire. You got it in your blood. You miss the crowd. You know, you go out there and do. I kind of got sideways a little bit and decided I'd go back. And I made about a year run again and got a little bored and decided I was going to go back to school, got married, had kids, and yeah. then just in the last 3 years, I was all but done with it. And had a tag partner, old Snake Williams Jr. He was out playing golf one day. He said, "Man, I got an idea, and you'd be perfect for it." And he ran that this Southern Discomfort deal. Yeah, we made that on. We got the Netflix mm-hmm. on that one. Mm-hmm. And man, it I was hooked again. I was hooked again. It's once you got it in you, fella, you can't get it out. I'm telling you.
Could I ask you a question, kind of to rewind on something that you had said? Like, we get to like the year 2000. You kind of you said you hit the independent circuit. This is like a really notorious time for quote unquote independent wrestling in America, because you still have the competition on Monday nights going mm-hmm. on. You still have ECW, and I've always been told, I wasn't there, and I've never fallen on my back for a living, so I don't know, and I want to hear it from someone who was there. As a wrestling fan, you're always told that, like, the independent circuit is so dry in the early 2000s, like, prior to, like, Ring of Honor and, like, prior to the death of WCW. Can you talk a little bit about that time in independent wrestling?
Well, I mean, it's always there. Everybody's got shows. It just it wasn't, you know, they weren't drawing the way mm-hmm. that they're drawing now. You know, it's been right currently is a resurgence on the independent scene. Back then, you had guys who'd been in the business, and they started things up, and they did their running. I mean, Memphis was always around, you know.
Right.
Where I was standing, you know, at coming from OVW and OVW having a TV production, you know, and going to Memphis having a TV. If you had a TV mm-hmm. production, in my mind, I didn't put you in the same levels independent, right?
Fair.
Yeah, guys running the armories and the bingo halls, and they didn't have TV. That was more the independent feel, and that's where I ended up. Was working, you know, was a Bad to the Bone, was Danny's opposition. I worked for them for a little bit. I might have did an IWA show here or there. Hey, you want to come in? Yeah, I'll come in. Anywhere you could find work, you'd go work. But I never could put a loop together. It was so far and few between. Well, we're not running this month. We're running next month. Or, sure. you know, it just wasn't consistent. Now you've got a lot of independent promotions that don't have TV that are really running consistent. IPW up there in Muncie, Indiana, I ran with them for about a year and a half. They run monthly. Yeah. And just like clockwork. And then they have another show that they do. And, their JICW, he was trying to run a monthly. He's making it work out there. So it's guys are actually finally figured out, you know, you've got to put a consistent show together. And it can't just be we're doing wrestling second Saturday of next month. Come on by and check us out. I think it's the internet that's really put a lot of people out there, at least to draw locally. You can't just rely on that social media to do it, but it's absolutely helped. And social media influence wasn't there in 2000, sure. 1999. It was all brand new. So you know, I think that's the biggest difference now. That's why you may see that resurgence. The boys are able to get their stuff out there a little bit better. Everybody's got their own page. Everybody's got a, you know, even Jebediah Blackhawk's got a Facebook page, an Instagram, and a YouTube. I ain't got no OnlyFans, so.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I want to take a moment to say cheers to you. Mentioned you had you got married, you had a family. So we're going to cheers to that really quick. Thank you, sir.
Cheers, sir. Cheers to you, Jack.
Are we taking shots or are we sipping?
We're taking shots.
All right.
Whatever you like.
You had mentioned that you got married, had a family in that time of that first retirement, went back to school. What was your career path at that time?
Education.
Really?
I'm a teacher by trade.
Cool. Really? I think that's really wonderful. Shout out to Freya the Slayer too. She was a former teacher mm-hmm. as well. I think
very noble of you, by the way.
I think maybe everyone in this room came from a family of teachers, if I'm not wrong. Did you have a family that was teachers?
No.
He was a
mechanical engineer for a long time, and then mm-hmm. he got into real estate.
So you became, I'm going to assume, public school?
Yeah.
So you were a wrestler, and then you became a public school teacher. You chose the two most thankless jobs of all time. Mm. What drew you to education?
Influence. You know, a lot of times your teachers influence you the most. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up elementary school, I had elementary school teachers that, you know, they opened me up to a lot of different yeah. things, different experiences. What was and when I was in school, it was, you know, it wasn't like it is now. You know, the arts and the music and the things that were part of the everyday, and it's there now, but it wasn't like it was then. I mean, it was just a completely different feel when I was going to school mm-hmm. than it is now. Now it feels really packaged and boxed. The emotion that teachers felt, you know, they were teaching with emotion, and now if you teach with emotion, you know, you get a write up for it.
Yeah.
In some situations.
What did you teach?
Fifth grade.
Fifth grade. Wow. That's
incredibly hard time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them about 12 years old going on 30. That's why I ain't a teacher no more.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask that. That kind of explains it. When I went to school a couple years ago, I didn't go to school as a younger man. I started when I was 30, and education was on my list. And when I realized that I couldn't have more than a 5-word conversation with any of the 18-year-olds in my class, I realized, man, maybe teaching high school 5 years from now is not for you, because who knows the way that they're going to be talking. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, like, seriously, as like my mom's a teacher, long line of teachers, teaching is like the incredibly hardest thing to do, maybe other than falling on your back, getting in a car, going to the next town and doing it again. So you retire from professional wrestling, you go to school, marriage, kids, become a teacher. What is the moment that you realized you didn't want to teach any longer? Was there one specific thing? Or I know what it was for a lot of people in my family. It was just this building sense of like a loss of hopelessness almost.
Yeah, I really wasn't enjoying it. It was a lot of logistics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I coming up to me, you know, teacher had the green book, and you know, but now it was, you know, you sit on planning period. Well, I got planning. I got a minute to breathe here. And no, you got this meeting to go to. Or, okay, well, it's my lunch break. Well, I know it's your lunch break, but you got this meeting to go to. And then, you know, you walk by a classroom. You say, well, that teacher ain't doing nothing but looking at the computer. That's because they're nonstop checking emails coming from this one, this one, this one, this one. And my biggest pet peeve is emails. You know, I'm terrible. I'm terrible at the computer anyway. And you got to have that as a strong suit now as an educator.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always been a white dry erase and chalkboard kind of guy. You know, I'll stand up, or I'll show up 3 hours early to write out what I want to write out. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's, you got to plug this in and shoot it on the, you know, white screen, and then I'm just pull up the YouTube video to show them. What if we just discuss it? No, they got to see the video, that way they get it. I'm like, I can explain it where they get it, I'm sure. You got to show me the video. You know, it just feels so carbon copied. It's which is a good thing, because that way everybody's on the same page. But when you got an instructor like me, I'm not as good at it as one who's better at it. Sure. I'm more of a lecturer. I'm more of a, you know, if you don't understand it, that's okay. okay, I'll spend a little more time on it with you, and we'll, you know, and no, we got to move on. We got the workshop models, and you got all these different things that you got to incorporate that, you know, and because different, you know, children learn different ways. Mm-hmm. I understand that completely. But if you're entertaining as a lecturer, and you've got your kids draw standing up, or I mean, we're sitting here talking on your podcast, and I'm doing all talking.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. You do that to the children. The children are just enamored because, one, you're standing there in front of them at 6'5", 265 pounds, and they're just, you know, oh, wow, you know, and you got a voice that carries, and you know, okay. And, you know, that's one thing that I did appreciate about all the kids that I had, man. I never had, no matter what kind of kids I had in my classroom, I never had a disciplinary issue once. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because they scared of me.
I was going to ask, do you think how much of that is?
But you know, it was. I had a lot of fun with it, but it just didn't feel. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Went sure. All the way through school, got a master's degree, and this ain't what I thought it was.
Listening to you talk about it, you can still tell that you were very, very passionate about it.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Was there ever a time where you connected with a kid about professional wrestling? Did you ever, like, were the kids, I guess that would be my first question, is did the kids know your background?
You know, I tried to kayfabe it to them, because, you know, you know, I'd been out of it for a little while, you know, and then, and if they started looking and digging hard enough, they'd find something. Man, this guy looks just like, you know, and then they'd, okay, yeah, there was a time, but, you know, that was in the past, you know. And then all of a sudden somebody called me on the weekend, like, hey, so-and-so's kid's sick, we're going to do a benefit show, we want you to come in, you work for free. Hell yeah, I'll come in and work for free, you know. And you strap, you know, you're overweight and you ain't been in the ring in 2 years, and you go in there and you do it one time and you get over and crowd pops and it's, oh, well, all right, maybe it's time for another run. And you go on a couple shows and it's like, no, you can't go back. All right, I'll lay it down. We'll go back and do this for a little while, find something else. And then, you know, but this last run that I decided to go on, I decided to go all in on it. Like I said, I partnered up with Snake, and I said, man, this is the last one. I said, you're gonna sell out, let's do it. And we did, and then we kind of got sideways a little bit on a couple things that wasn't what we were doing, weren't working. And that's OVW is a pretty good gauge of if your stuff's not getting across. If they're not buying it, New York ain't buying it, Orlando ain't gonna buy it. So hey man, we need to try something else. And I had a talk with Al, because I, you know, we were kind of frustrated because we weren't getting what we were looking for. And I said, hey man, I said, I'd like to go back and do what I was doing in the beginning, because that's what I started at. And he said, all right man, I'll give you a dark match. And I go out there and I just exploded a dark match. Mm-hmm. And cut a couple promos, and yeah, this is you, this is what you're going to do. And do I fit in, you know, it remains to be seen. You know, I've still got a few bumps left in me, but it was luckily here, you know, most recently, you know, he recognizes, hey, this one, he's a hell of a teacher. I can say hell. He's a hell of a teacher.
You can say more than hell if you want.
Sure. No, I wouldn't do. He's a hell of a teacher. And, you know, he communicates well with the boys, and he has respect to the boys. So, hey, you know, I was like, hey, what do you think about maybe our agent, you know? Well, I don't know. We ain't really got room for more agents. And then it came across, hey, you know, here's a headset. See what you can do. Can you call times? Can you give these matches, you know? And I go out there, and so far I've thrown nothing but strikes with all the guys I've worked with. And, I mean, you all have been at the shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, more often than not.
At least two or three of them that you watched are ones that I've been behind. And I'm really, really proud of all the guys that I've worked with in there that, you know, and that's another thing, man. When I was a kid, I didn't listen. You know, I mean, green, you know, when I was wrestling, started breaking in. I had Rip Rogers in my ear. And I was so hung up in myself, I wouldn't listen to Rip Rogers, you know.
Do you mind to describe who Rip Rogers is?
For folks who may not know.
He's a Rip Rogers is probably most recently, he trained OVW, the class that everybody recognizes, you know. Can I name him?
Yeah, sure.
Well, please. Y'all name him. Y'all know him better than I do.
Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar.
That's right.
Batista.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I missing?
He's also recently really remade himself into kind of a internet like podcast
he's
guy.
He's got a podcast going on.
Which is like has a ton of great insight as well on it. I mean, when you have a training pedigree like that, you get to, for free, sit down an hour a week with somebody with that wealth of knowledge if you're a podcast fan, which I imagine you are if you're listening to this.
And by golly, man, the thing is, when you're 20 years old, it don't matter who it is talk. When I was 20, I didn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm the next big thing. I'm going to be this, you know. And when a guy like Rip Rogers comes to you and he says, you know, we talked to Jim Ross about you. You're big enough. You're just not big enough. Well, you got to get in the gym. You're fat. Okay, well, I'm working six nights a week. I'm working the shoot job to pay for the insurance so I can work six nights a week. He goes, well, when are you sleeping? I was, I go to bed about 10 o'clock. And he just walked away. Because you can always sleep when you're dead. But if you got to chase that dream, you know, it's what it takes. You know, they're not buying offensive, you know, they're not buying Division II offensive linemen out there. They're buying, I was in the contest against guys like Kane and Taker, you know.
Yeah.
When you hit over 6 foot, you know, you're in that weird kind of frame, you're big enough, but you're not big enough. You hit 6'3", now you got to be big enough. And these guys, you know, that at that time, I mean, they all look like monsters, and I just look like a D2 offensive lineman out there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really realize it. You guys familiar with Rob Conway, OVW guy? He NWA champion for a little while, OVW fella. He got a shot. He was up there in New York. He was a WWE guy. I think they hung him on like a French gimmick or something. Had a tag team up there. But Rob Conway, I had a match with him, and he's a body. I mean, God, he had a great, you know, he's great physique on the guy. About 5'9", and I just looked awkward in the ring with him. And I saw that playback, and I'm like, I knew exactly what he was talking about, because it made him look small, and it made me look weird, and that doesn't work on TV. It's got to be an aesthetic.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless, of course, you're a chainsaw-wielding mask maniac or some crazy, but I wasn't, you know. But that kind of put it in reference to me, and I'm like, man, and that got me frustrated. And that's about time I left. You know, I was like, man, that just ain't gonna work for me. I gotta, you know, and I had some personal things going on, but, you know.
Who has a harder head, a 12-year-old in fifth grade or an up-and-coming wrestler?
An up-and-coming wrestler. Up-and-coming, oh, every time.
Having said that, you were there kind of during, and have been at OVW kind of during the, people would argue probably the two periods of three years that were the most important in the history of the entire company.
Pure luck.
And a lot of things usually are. The older I get, the more I realize that there's a lot of luck that goes into things. But for you, you plugged away at this. It can't just be pure luck. It can't just be pure luck.
Man.
But you happen to be at both of them.
That's right, man. They
that feel like a book?
Man, I don't know, man. Maybe. John Cosper's out there if he's listening. You know, I got a story. But no, man, I was there in the beginning. I watched it become OVW. I was there when the developmentals came in. And you know, that's the coolest part about it, man. The developmentals come in and you think, cause we were doing TV every week and we were getting over, and then, you know, local, you'd walk into the Kroger. Hey, I watched you on, you know, but then they bring these developmental guys in, like you named them, right? Mm-hmm. And you're standing next to these. These are the best athletes in the world. I mean, there's nobody out there that looks like John Cena, just creating a lab, you know, or Dave Bautista. You know, gosh, man, I'm standing next to this guy, and yeah, I got an inch on him, but, you know, he just looks incredible, you know.
Yeah, jacked.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, golly, man, where'd they find these guys? Like, they melted some ice and they came out. But then, you know, I come back now. You know, we happened to come back, and OVW was kind of on the verge. It was really, really struggling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm like, well, we went on a summer tour with them, and we did some business. And we're like, man, we're hanging on. And then all of a sudden, you know, Matt Jones pulls Netflix in. And it's just erupted. And I'm like, man, I was almost to the point, like, man, this just ain't working. It's time to go. And I'm so glad that I didn't. Because it is, you know, now we're talking, you know, they brought in Ed as another backer, and this guy's got visions of he doesn't want to feed the big companies. He wants to eat the big companies.
He's incredibly enthusiastic.
Golly, yeah, man. He is.
He doesn't want to be.
Love you, Ed.
Yeah, no doubt, man. He wants to be number two or three. He said, yeah. No, we got better. Because, honestly, you guys go to the show. Yeah. We've got some of the best talent right now in the wrestling ring.
Absolutely.
As anybody. And the production, he's improved the production at OVW to the point it's like it's terrifying because it's so real. And that's like, golly, man, they've struggled in that. It's there. And you watch a program from a year ago versus what they just put on Thursday. And it is daylight and dark, man. It's like, God, it's for real. This is really going to happen.
You're absolutely right. And in the time that we've been doing this podcast, like I started working down here with Victor and Brian about a year ago and maybe 3 weeks ago, so something like that. When I was in Ohio, I would watch religiously the two big guys on Monday and Wednesday. And then Friday, and then I'd go to my local shows, and that was it. I watched them every single week, and then we started getting into getting ready for the podcast and the summer tour. And the first time I saw the show was at the Country Boy show that from episode one of the Wrestlers on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And from that time to when we started the podcast, I was still watching those guys on a regular basis, and then doing this. Because that was part of, you know, the podcasting part of it. But now we're 6 months in. I don't keep up with those guys. I mean, I still try to watch, but it's like it's something that's on in the background. It's like comfort TV.
This time of year, it's a little hard to ignore those guys.
Okay, sure.
But
there's an exception to the rule, but more often than not, I mean, they're on, but I don't pay as much attention. I sit and study this stuff. Like, we'll go to the show, yeah. And you can see the improvements. Like, for example, this week there was improvements with the concession stand, which is a wonderful place to begin because we've talked about that, and we've seen people get frustrated when they can't get in the door, they can't get food or whatever. But you're absolutely right.
Week by week.
Leaps and bounds.
And it's such a great time to be a fan of OVW, and I'm sure to be backstage at OVW in any capacity, where you guys have known for a long time the action's been good, the writing's been good, and now you have this opportunity to show everyone what you guys do. Mm-hmm. When you started your wrestling career, did you ever think that you would be back at OVW? This is kind of to mirror back what I had asked you before. When you started your wrestling career, did you think you'd be back at OVW now? And did you think you would ever see OVW be what it was when you started? Fast forward a few years, have a rough time for a few years, and now it seems like nothing can stop you guys.
Man, when I started out, OVW was a stepping stone to get to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how everybody viewed it.
Yeah.
If you didn't get to New York, then you didn't make it. And being there now, OVW is a place that guys who have been to New York are like, man, this is cool. This is what it's supposed to feel like. It feels, it's a different, it's almost a throwback. It's almost a throwback to what wrestling was instead of what it is now.
Yeah.
It feels, it's almost bleak. Some matches, some of them, you almost believe it. You almost believe it, and if you, when you're, and that's the teaching. That's the way they're teaching it.
Yeah.
It's like that's how it's supposed to look, boys. Go out there and do it. Make them believe it. It doesn't look like some of them, and it's wrestling. Sometimes it looks like acrobatics.
Sure.
Other times it looks like two guys out there in a conflict, and if you don't win, you don't eat. And when you see those matches, those are the ones that got you guys out there salivating. You watch Cash Flow work.
Yeah,
he goes out there and every night, it's the mentality, if I don't win, I don't eat. I love that guy, man. He's fantastic. I talk about that guy for a minute, man.
Did you ever run into him?
No. No, we've been in the same amount of time. I mean, we're talking about.
I was kind of thinking when you were going through your history, it made a lot of sense that you guys might have crossed paths, but kind of crazy that you never did.
Different paths, man. OVW and IWA. It was always perpendicular to each other. Mm-hmm. Like they know. I mean, they had some. You know, there was maybe, and then it just no. You can't work there, and no, they can't work here, and it just didn't work out. And Cash was an IWA guy,
right?
And I was an OVW guy. And golly, man, to watch what he is now versus what he was then, because you have to, you know, it's different brands. You know, you're trained and you learn to work a certain way. And Cashflow now has that, he's got both. He's got that mentality, but he's also got that polish.
Yeah.
And that's scary, especially on a guy that's hungry. Golly, man, this guy's worth so much more than him. He's still hungry.
Yeah.
You know, I've already realized, you know, hey, I'm not going to be the heavyweight champion of the world. But I believe that Cashflow could probably be the heavyweight champion of the world. So he's over with me, right? And I'm not just brown-nosing this guy.
Sure.
I'm not just brown-nosing this guy. He's
got no reason to.
Yeah,
no.
Man. He's for real. We got an opportunity to do business. It was a spot show in E-Town last summer. And whoever he had was a no-show, and they pulled me in on him, and I went out there. I went 2 out of 3 falls with him. And by golly, it's one of the most memorable matches I've ever had.
Cool. I don't think I would have minded to see that.
Oh, no, I would very much like to see that.
We burnt it down. You know, I'm so used to going out there and being over. And, you know, because it's automatic. You know, it's a Jebediah Blackhawk. And then you go out there with cash flow, and it's chop. Chop. Like, okay, butter. Okay. All right. Yeah. You know, but, I mean, it was great. And it was a whopping crowd of maybe 70, because it was, I think it was a jump park in E-Town. It was like, hey, we got a show. Let's do it. They bought a show, and we went out and did it. And by golly, man, it was one of the most memorable matches I've ever had. And I've wrestled. If you go back, I mean, I can't even count them, fellas. It's got to be in the thousands. It's got to be in the thousands.
We've talked a lot about kind of the newly renovated Davis Arena, but one thing that's kind of always been at the Davis Arena is these black and white portraits when you walk in.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have been taken down or added to, but they've mostly remained the same over the years. And you walk through them, and there's some of the names we've talked about on this podcast. When you talk about that class of OVW, every wrestling fan knows what that class of OVW is, you know. But there's a ton of other massive names on there as well. And then there's one of you. When you walk through there and you know what that means to be included in that list of names, and you know what it means to the fans for you to be included in that list of names, what does that make you feel?
I told you can't hit me below the belt. You know, the OVW feels like home to me. That's why I'm so happy to be back there, to be a part of it, even if it's, you know, moving into production. It's something about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, you can't have me. I'm not doing that.
That's the Brian Hines move right there.
There's something about OVW, man. It's something special. It came from Watt Street in Jeffersonville. It went from Watt Street and guys that you've never even heard of.
It's the old Davis Arena, right?
The Phantoms. Doug Basham was a teenager, you know. Jason Lee and gosh, man, Trailer Park Trash, Flash Flanagan and Sean Venom. And then these guys, you've never even heard of these guys. Then it moves to Mechanic Street. And then there's Nick Densmore, who's got like 2-3 months ahead of me, right? I come in after him, and David C., bless his heart, he's passed. But, you know, gosh, man, just a million guys you never heard of. And then you got guys that, they were sent to OVW to learn. They didn't volunteer to go to OVW. They didn't pay, you know, no. New York sent them to learn, and they learned how to wrestle. And these guys, they learned how to wrestle from those guys.
Right.
You know, they learned how to wrestle from Doug Basham. They learned how to wrestle from Nick Densmore.
That's Eugene, for people that don't know, he went on to WWE and became Eugene. But in OVW was like this just like beloved figure. Right. Beloved figure.
This is a local guy, man.
Not that Eugene wasn't, but Nick Dinsmore and Eugene are not the same character.
No.
No, not at all. Not at all. Funny story on Nick. You want one?
Yeah. I love it.
Golly, man, we're green as gills, right? We're out there. My very first match is against Dinsmore.
Okay.
My very first night. Thanksgiving, way back in the dark ages. And we're in class together, and we're going over every little thing. I mean, we have a WrestleMania match. It's going to take 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And Danny sat there in the chair the whole time after we were done with training. We would work this mat. We would figure it out. I mean, kayfabe's dead anyway, right? We're working this thing out, and night of the show comes, and he sells 100 tickets, and I'm over because everybody I knew, it's his first match. It's going to be great. I'm under the hood as the Black Hawk.
Okay.
And we go out. There this it is. You check it out. You check it out. It's out there. It's floating around. It's on Nick's page. He's still got it. And we go out there, and we're in Gorilla, you know, backstage before we go
sure,
out.
Yeah, sure.
And Danny says, all right, boys, take it home in 7. We had 45 minutes worth of junk to do in 7 minutes. And what did we do like two true greenhorns? We did 45 minutes worth of junk. And so it's out there. Fastest match ever. Nothing meant anything. It was a complete blow by. And they forgot it as soon as we did it. But that was my first one. That was my first one.
Jim Diet, Blackhawk. You can find them on every social media that's not OnlyFans. Thank you so much for sitting down with us this afternoon.
It really has been a pleasure.